Okay, hello. welcome to Regina's Seven Steps to Awakening. Last night when I came on for Holy Spirit Guides, I heard Cheryl doing hers. I don't know if anyone else is teaching, sharing theirs, but I know that several of us felt to get on this boat, and those of us who felt to get on it, I think, are very, very happy that we did. Very, very happy. I may have mentioned to you that in the first few quotes, my mind was going through some resistance and telling me I didn't want to do this, didn't want to do this seven steps work, and I'm happy that I didn't listen to it, because what I have is the experience of love while I'm doing this seven steps work, the experience of clarity. I'm just really happy that I'm doing it. What I'm going to do is give you all a link to my Seven Steps journal, which I keep online. If anybody's listening to the recording, the link is... Oh, you know what? I forgot to log in as admin. You know what? I'm going to have to step out for a second and log back in as admin in order to give you this quote. So hold on one moment, please. All right, now I can give you the link. So here's the link. The link to my journal is RDA7, that's the digit, the number, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And what I did over the weekend was I reorganized the journal, because what I discovered and then what my friend Ruby discovered is that it was very hard, the way it was organized before, to get to a certain quote. So I've reorganized it into steps, and then within the steps, the seven steps, I've reorganized it into sections of no more than 25 quotes per section, which makes it a whole lot easier to find the quote that you want to find. And so today we're going to be starting with quote number 25. So if you open up rdasevenstepsjournal.wordpress.com, once you open it, if you look up at the top, you'll see where there's a little menu bar. And the third option on the menu bar is called Step 1, because that's the step that I'm in right now. And we're actually going to start with number 25, so you just click on A, number 1 through 25, and that will give you a link to each of those quotes. And then, of course, click on number 25, and you go directly into that. Just to make it easier for anyone who isn't good at following directions. I know that some people are really good at following directions and some people aren't. That's just the way it is. So if you aren't good at following directions and that was too many for you, here's a direct link to quote number 25, or actually it's the journaling of quote number 25. And before we start looking at this, what I would like to do is... Actually, I want to say one more thing first, then we'll go into a moment of silence. I want to tell you that next Sunday night will be my last Holy Spirit Guides. I'm feeling guided to spend my time really focused on the seven steps. It's not feeling right at all to me at all right now to go back and be reading these older messages. So I'm not going to... So I'll finish up the Regina and Laurent series next Sunday night. And then after that, on Sunday nights, I will also be doing the seven steps. I guess I don't know my guidance for sure until I get there, but I think I will be doing the seven steps both on Sunday night and Monday during this time, which is helpful because there are a lot of quotes, and so that will allow us to move through the quotes more quickly. So in a couple of weeks, we'll be doing this Sunday night and Monday afternoon. But for one more week, it will be Monday afternoon only. All right, let's go into our moment of silence. All right, amen. I had to get up during my moment of silence and let Jamie out, but I figured instead of saying, wait, I have to let Jamie out, and then leaving you in silence again while I did that, I would just leave you in silence and say amen when I got back. All right, so I am in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, on page 20. We're looking at quotes by Ramana Maharshi as rewritten by Muru Ganar. And quote number 25 says, "Knowledge is manifold, say they who know objects, but not freedom from the dire delusion of differences. When the senses, five, driven outward by desire, are pulled back, then true, full awareness comes, and there is no other to be known." Okay, again, Ramana Maharshi. "Knowledge is manifold, say they who know objects, but not freedom from the dire delusion of differences. When the senses, five, driven outward by desire, are pulled back, then true, full awareness comes, and there is no other to be known." All right, so looking at the journal then, this was what I wrote. "When awareness is known, all that is known. So everything is known. Therefore, seek not to know this or that. Be not too curious about the world, the whys and hows of circumstances. Rest in awareness and let awareness be the only focus. It is all." So, of course, we know that it seems like there's a lot of things to learn in the world. It seems like there's a lot of things to learn on the spiritual path. And I think that we've all spent our fair share of time learning that stuff, or as much of that stuff as we could learn. But what this is asking us to do now is to let go of that desire to learn. That desire to learn about spirituality, that desire to learn about diet and health, that desire to understand economics or science, at least until we know self. I feel that's what Ramana would say, is he would say, first get to know yourself, and then, you know, if there is something else that you are to know, then get to know that. But the foundation of all things is what we are, is ourself. And so if we do not know ourself, we don't truly know that other thing. Ramana did have knowledge about different herbs, for example, that were helpful for different situations. He also knew the Hindu scriptures. But all of this knowledge he actually gained after coming to know thyself. So that should be our focus. And actually, we're distracted if we feel that learning other things is going to make us better. That's a distraction. Or learning other things is going to help us awaken. That's a distraction. We want to come to know thyself, and then we will learn whatever it is we need to learn. If you'll be patient for one moment, Jamie would like back in. This is becoming our Monday afternoon routine. Not only did she go out, but she came back in filthy and wagging her tail. So, all right. If you are in quote number 25 in the journal, what you can do is scroll down below the area where comments can be taken. And if you look on the left, you'll see a little number 26. And you can just click on that number 26, and that will take you to the next quote. For those of you who are not yet in the journal, here is a link to the journaling of quote number 26. Of course, before I look at the journal, I'm going to look back at the book. At the bottom of page 20, Ramana Maharshi, number 26. Those whom from books have learnt about the truth supreme esteem themselves supreme in wisdom and fail to seek the knower and taste the bliss of self, but test and measure the silent sage. What folly is this? All right, again. Those whom from books have learnt about the truth supreme esteem themselves supreme in wisdom and fail to seek the knower and taste the bliss of self, but test and measure the silent sage. What folly is this? All right, to the journal. Number 26. Why test and judge others to determine their enlightenment? Forget their enlightenment. Rest in awareness and simply be. So I know that I have been in discussions and thoughts before about certain people and whether they were enlightened as they say they are. And I know that I have been involved in looking at evidence, which I then said, yes, that evidence points to the fact that this one is enlightened, or no, that evidence points to the fact that that one is not enlightened. And maybe we've all done that. If so, you know, we are the ones Ramana is speaking of here, where he says, those whom from books have learnt about the truth supreme esteem themselves supreme in wisdom and fail to seek the knower and taste the bliss of self. Right? So, if we've done this, well, it's time to stop now. It's that simple. I do remember Muji telling a story once about a woman who came up to him. He said he was actually running a little bit late for satsang, and that he was trying to hurry along. And the woman came up to him and asked him, are you Satguru, which basically would mean enlightened, awakened. Are you Satguru? And his response was something like, you know, What good does that do you to know the answer to that? You know, what good does that do you? And that's what we're being told here. It doesn't do us any good to judge and determine if others are enlightened or not. It only does us good to continue the practice and to reach self-realization ourselves. So why test and judge others to determine their enlightenment? Forget their enlightenment. Rest in awareness and simply be. All right, scrolling down, and on the left, click on number 27. And once again, I'll post the link directly in the room. And going back to the book, Ramana Maharshi, at the top of page 21, quote 27. Oh, I love this quote. Some of these are like among my favorites. This is one of my favorites. Mine is the only mind amenable to my correction. If one forgets this truth and broods over others' faults, one only fouls one's own mind more and more. This quote reminds me very much of the quote from A Course in Miracles. The miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. Again, the Ramana quote. Mine is the only mind amenable to my correction. If one forgets this truth and broods over others' faults, one only fouls one's own mind more and more. All right, so let's look at the journaling of quote number 27. Ego strengthens itself through correcting others, while proper self-correction weakens ego. Therefore, only one type of correction has any possible benefits at all: proper self-correction. I don't feel anything to say right this second. It seems pretty clear, but I am feeling to read it again. So let's look at this again. Ego strengthens itself through correcting others, while proper self-correction weakens ego. Therefore, only one type of correction has any possible benefits at all: proper self-correction. And of course, we know that proper self-correction would not include judgment, condemnation, guilt. It's just a realization of an error, of something that can be corrected. I was talking to my friend Ruby yesterday on my way back from church while we were driving back together, and she said that that often as she's saying something, she notices the error in it. And I know I have the exact same experience. As it's coming out of my mouth, I hear the error in it, the ego in it. And so then, if we're noticing that, then we can engage in proper self-correction, which would really be not to repeat that type of behavior, whatever we noticed we were doing, not to repeat that. But again, without judgment, without condemnation, without "I'll never get this right," that would not be proper self-correction. Ego strengthens itself not only through correcting others, but ego strengthens itself through improper self-correction, the judgment. So if our purpose is to weaken ego, then we want to make sure we're exercising proper self-correction, which is continually moving ourselves away from ego habits without judgment. Ego strengthens itself through correcting others, while proper self-correction weakens ego. Therefore, only one type of correction has any possible benefits at all: proper self-correction. All right, if you scroll down to the bottom and on the left, you can click on number 28. And I haven't seen anybody new enter the room, so I'm not going to post the link this time, unless I get a special request to do so. Otherwise, I'm assuming you all are able to follow along on your own. And I'm going to the book on page 21, reading Ramana Maharshi, quote number 28. Only he who has attained immortal life can save the world. For the ignorant one to help another is but the blind leading the blind. Okay, I'm going to go directly to the journal this time. That was pretty easy to understand. Quote number 28. Focus on my awakening and do not try to help others. This is the best advice. If others are seemingly helped by what I do or say, that is by the grace of God and not by me. Do not be fooled that I can do anything or help anyone. Only seek full knowledge of self beyond ego entirely and rest there. All else will take care of itself. And I think you guys know that around August of 2011, I was guided to stop counseling That was not a big surprise, because what had happened in my mind is it seemed like I was counseling people who appeared to be stuck. That was my perception. You know, I'd been with them for quite a while, and there appeared to be no movement being made. Every time they would call, they would be in the same place with the same problems, concerns, fears. And what started happening to me is I started noticing that my mind was thinking about what can I do to help this person. You know, while I was in the shower, while I was brushing my teeth, while I was doing dishes. What can I do to help this person? And the proper self-correction, in my case, that came in for that was let go of counseling completely. Let go completely. Stop trying to help anyone. Simply focus on your own awakening. And that's what I'm doing now. In fact, there have been changes that have been made this year as a result of my guidance for more time alone and more silence. And as I've been making some of these changes, I have heard a little bit of, but what you were doing there was helping me. You know, like I really am not feeling to go to the local course group anymore. And instead I'm going to the Shrine of St. Therese and sitting in silence for an hour, and then going to the zoo and sitting in silence with the animals for a couple of hours. That feels like my guidance. But when I told the local course group that I was going to quit coming, a few of them said, but you're the clarity here. And there was that feeling, you know, I could hear one person even said something like, but I come here, you know, for you. And I could feel that thought of me, I have to come to help these people. These people that are asking me to come because my presence is helpful to them. I have to come and help these people. But that is not my guidance. That's a thought in my mind, a thought that comes from the idea I'm the helper. Right? I'm the helper. If I let go of that identity and I follow my guidance is clear. It's right here in number 28, and it won't be the only time you'll see it in this journal. And it's been consistent guidance since I've been was guided to let go of counseling in August. My job, by the way, the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself, right? My job is to focus on my awakening and do not try to help others. I told you that it has not been feeling right for me to do Holy Spirit guides, to be going over those old messages since I got back from India. Before I went to India, it felt perfectly right. But since I've been back, it hasn't felt right. I did feel to go ahead and finish the series of messages that I'm on, but I felt, because I was so near the end, maybe, but I felt that when this series of messages ended, to end that. It seems much more appropriate for me right now to be teaching that which is speaking directly to me, not something that historically spoke to me. And again, when I gave the announcement last night that I was letting go of Holy Spirit guides, I heard at least one person say to me, in fact two, that it had been helpful to them and they had hoped I would continue. And I saw a little bit of that thought, but for them. But if I was to listen to that thought, I would not be following my guidance. You know, I imagine that someone who's in a role of teacher, or maybe even a role of healer, could delay their own awakening indefinitely by following the idea, I have to help others. And so I really appreciate this guidance. Dove says, yes, Regina, to be willing to say this is not right for me anymore is to say I choose happiness, since I can choose only one. All right, so let's look at number 28 again. Focus on my awakening and do not try to help others. Now, the funny thing is that doesn't mean others won't be helped. In fact, shortly after I quit counseling, we were just sitting here at my house talking, you know, on one of the days that we were all here. Maybe it was a study with the scribe or something. And I said something, but also part of that same conversation was the fact that I was letting go of counseling, that it wasn't my job to help others. And whatever I had just said, Kathy Scott Perry said, but what you just said helped me. And I said, yeah, but the difference is I wasn't trying to. Right? So even as we all focus on our own awakening, that doesn't mean others won't be helped. And in fact, let's look back at number 28. Focus on my awakening and do not try to help others. This is the best advice. If others are seemingly helped by what I do or say, that is by the grace of God and not by me. Do not be fooled that I can do anything or help anyone. Only seek full knowledge of self beyond ego entirely and rest there. All else, including any help that anyone needs, all else will take care of itself. All right, so if you are in number 28, you can scroll to the bottom and click on number 29. It looks to me like maybe Monica has joined us, so I will give this link so that if she wants to, she can click on the journal. Here is a link directly to number 29. And we're going to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, and we're reading quote number 29 by Ramana Maharshi via Muruganar. One has to blame oneself alone if one should try to teach the truth supreme to those who are immature. These might reject the highest truth as false because it contradicted what they had been told before and had believed as true. I don't know about you guys, but I know I did go through a phase when I first started studying the Course, like in the first year or two, where I was kind of like a Christian evangelizer trying to save the world by teaching everyone about what was in the Course and getting them to convert. I soon came to find that that was a mistake and let that go. But maybe some of you have tried to convert others to the Course too, so maybe you know that zealousness, that immature zealousness that I'm talking about. Well, here Ramana says, one has to blame oneself alone if one should try to teach the truth supreme to those who are immature. These might reject the highest truth as false because it contradicted what they had been told before and had believed as true. Okay, so let's look at the journal, number 29. Oh yeah, I made this very simple. Never ask someone to change their beliefs. Just be. Rest in awareness of self, always. And for me, the way this is spoken in the journal, it goes beyond the idea of trying to teach someone the Course or NTI or trying to get someone else to do the seven steps. A couple of weeks ago, someone, I guess the word is confronted me. I had said something that this person didn't like, and she confronted me and was telling me not to say that again and what I meant by that and what I was trying to do with that. And in my perception, she was completely mistaken about what I said, about why I said it, about my intentions. But when I checked for guidance in that moment, the thought that came back to me was this one. Never ask someone to change their beliefs. Just be. Rest in awareness of self always. So the guidance I felt was to let her keep her beliefs about me. And in fact, if you look at that, you can really ask what in me would want her to see me a certain way. And clearly the answer is ego. So if I'm trying to get her to see me in a certain way, to realize that she was mistaken about me, then what I'm really doing is strengthening my own ego. And again, that's just not helpful now. So I just let it be. I just told her that I was sorry and I would not say that again. Yesterday I saw her for the second time since that event. The first time she kind of avoided looking at me. The second time yesterday when I saw her look at me directly in the eyes and smile. So maybe whatever it was is passing, I don't know. But I did nothing to get that look in the eyes and smile. Never ask someone to change their beliefs. I take that as an ego-reducing recommendation. And since I am into ego-reducing right now, I am willing to let people believe what they want to believe, including about me. Never ask someone to change their beliefs. Just be. Rest in awareness of self, always. So that goes for proselytizing, as well as more personal types of communications, at least in my mind. All right, let's scroll down to the bottom and click on number 30. Again, that would be on the left side of the screen at the, near the bottom, just above the gray area. And I am going to the book, number 30. As in the sky with thick clouds covered, no eye can see the glorious sun. One fails to see one's own self when the mind firmament is darkened by a dense cloud of thought. Again, Ramana Maharshi. As in the sky with thick clouds covered, no eye can see the glorious sun. One fails to see one's own self when the mind firmament is darkened by a dense cloud of thoughts. All right, from the journal, number 30. Know that when I am thinking, focused on the object of thought, I am not impersonally aware as self. When I notice focus on thought, choose to drop it. It is only distraction from the presence of the one eternal truth. Know that when I am thinking, focused on the object of thought, I am not impersonally aware as self. You can't be both at the same time. I can't be thinking about the woman who, you know, misunderstood me and thinks I have intentions that I don't have, and maybe be thinking about what I might say to her to get her to change her mind, or how I might react around her next time, or what she might say to me next time, right? These fantasy conversations. I can't be focused on all of that and know my impersonal self too. Because Regina is very much in that story. And when I'm focused on those thoughts, I am Regina, at least in belief. When I notice focus on thought, choose to drop it. Drop the focus or drop the thought. It is only distraction from the presence of the one eternal truth. That's the why. Why would I drop the focus or why would I drop the thought? Because it's distraction from the presence of the one eternal truth. And that's what I am wanting to awaken to fully now. And I don't awaken to it by continually being distracted from it. So I need to return my attention to the presence that I am. That impersonal presence that I am, which would have no such story, and stay there. This is a recurring theme in this journal, as you will see. All right, let's scroll down to the bottom, and we will click on number 31. And I will read from the book first on page 21, quote number 31. For those whose mind has not completely subsided. Do you know anybody that might fit that description? I do. I know someone. For those whose mind has not completely subsided, the false knowledge theirs already has only served to pile up sorrows. Gaining more such so-called knowledge only deepens illusion's darkness and helps not life at all. Again, for those whose mind has not completely subsided, remember I said earlier that I thought that if Ramana was here, he would tell us, first get to know yourself, then, you know, go learn about science, or go learn to play piano, or learn a foreign language, or learn music, or learn, you know, herbs, or learn, first get to know yourself, then go learn that. I told you that's the way he lived his life. First he got to know self, then he got to know the Hindu scriptures, then he learned about herbs and cooking, right? Well, this quote says again, for those whose mind has not completely subsided, the false knowledge theirs already has only served to pile up sorrows. Gaining more such so-called knowledge only deepens illusion's darkness and helps not life at all. So again, he's making that recommendation that we don't concern ourselves with the, quote, knowledge of the world until after we've come to know self. Come to know self first. In the journal, number 31. To learn about life in the world is useless knowledge. No need to know about this or that. Knowing in this way only permits judgment, which enables suffering. This includes knowing this and that about the story going on in people's lives. The story-involved mind wants to know, but the still mind is ever-present aware of stillness. When Jay and I were in India, you know, India is so different from here. Very, very different. Almost everything is different. And Jay noticed that he was very happy there. And as we looked at his happiness, what we came to see is the reason he was happy in India, where he might not have been as happy before at home, was because at home he had ideas in his mind about how things should be, how, you know, his girlfriend should be, how work should be, how, you know, his employer should be, how the other employees should be. He had ideas about how things should be, and so that judging mind could be turned on all the time, judging, always judging that this is not right and that is not right, and therefore he was not happy. So basically what he thought he knew, his knowledge about the world, kept him from being happy. Because everything he thought he knew about how a database is supposed to be set up, right? About how work is supposed to be, about how love relationships are supposed to be, everything he thought he knew, which he acquired in 45 years of life, actually caused suffering. In India, where everything was different, he didn't think he knew anything. He didn't think he knew how the women are supposed to be dressed. He didn't think he knew how people were supposed to behave during the festivals and the ceremonies. He didn't think he knew these things. Now, I will tell you there were Indians who thought they knew. You could see Indians that were suffering because they thought they knew the rules of how things were supposed to be in India, and especially when they saw a Westerner not following those rules, great suffering occurred. You're not supposed to carry your shoes through the ashram. You're certainly not supposed to wear your shoes in the ashram. You know, your bottom is supposed to be covered if you're a lady. You should not wear your hat into this place. You know, all the rules. And because they knew the rules, they suffered. Jay, who did not know the rules, was not suffering. So our knowledge, or what we call knowledge, opens up the opportunity for judgment. You can judge when that others aren't following those rules that we have in our mind. And that enables suffering. If we knew nothing, like Jay was in India, I mean, you should have seen him, an innocent child, just happy. He would not have any idea if the woman in front of him was inappropriately dressed or the man in front of him was breaking a rule. Therefore, he could not judge it, and he was happy. To learn about life in the world is useless knowledge. No need to know about this or that. Knowing in this way only permits judgment, which enables suffering. This includes knowing this and that about the story going on in people's lives. Why do I need to know what's going on in everybody's life so I can judge if they're running their own life correctly? So I can judge if they are making decisions correctly based on what I think they should do? That only leads to suffering. I don't need to know what they're doing in their lives. The story-involved mind wants to know, but the still mind is ever-present aware of stillness. And we can all be ever-present aware of stillness without knowing a thing. Again, Ramana Maharshi would say, make that the first goal. And when you've achieved that full present awareness of self, then, if there is something else to learn, learn that. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 32. And I will read number 32 in the book. While mind exists, creeds too exist. When mind turns inward in self-quest and gets caught up in the heart, no creed can exist. In that peace, serene, survive. That reminds me, just a symbol of this. I mentioned in this hour that I go to the St. Therese Shrine in Pueblo for an hour of silence on Wednesdays. They actually have a little chapel there called the Perpetual Adoration Chapel. Perpetual Adoration Chapel. And inside the chapel, there's a little vessel which inside includes one of those, I'm not Catholic, so I could be using some wrong words here, but includes one of those wafers, a wafer that is supposed to be the body of Christ. And so they look at that as Christ itself, as Jesus itself, Jesus. And they don't want Jesus left alone. And so what they seek are people who will come and sit in silence with Jesus 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can register to be a registered adorner so that Jesus is not left alone in the Perpetual Adoration Chapel. And so with this guidance to be silent, I found myself with a desire to also have a place where I went and sat. A place, a spiritual place, like a temple or a church. And when I inquired to see what was open where I could go to, I was told by the local Catholic diocese about this Perpetual Adoration Chapel. I was told it was open 24/7 and I could go there. And so when I went there, I saw the sign explaining what the Perpetual Adoration Chapel was and how they needed registered adorners so that someone is with Jesus 24/7. And one of the open times when they needed an adorner was on Wednesdays from 12 to 1. And I already had guidance to go to the zoo on Wednesday afternoons, and this place is right next to the zoo. So I thought, perfect, I will come here from 12 to 1. But I wasn't certain if they would accept me because I'm not a Catholic. I've never been a Catholic. So I went in and I told them that I was willing to be a registered adorner from 12 to 1 on Wednesdays, and because I wanted to sit in stillness. And I said, but I'm not Catholic. Is that okay? And she was so happy. She was so happy that I just wanted to come and sit in stillness. It didn't matter to her at all that I wasn't Catholic, and they signed me up, and I am now a registered adorner. You see, it's a symbol of the stillness goes beyond the creed, right? While mind exists, creeds too exist. When mind turns inward in self-quest and gets caught up in the heart, no creed can, in that peace serene, survive. So they were not at all concerned about my creed. They were just happy I wanted to come and sit in stillness. So let's go to the journal, number 32. Creeds, religions, are not truth. Inner stillness, the powerful sound of it, is the only truth. Creeds can point to truth if one seeks truth. This is the only useful purpose of a creed. Let every quote in the Seven Steps to Awakening point to truth, but do not use them to adopt new beliefs. New beliefs cover and hide truth. Actually, it doesn't matter whether we're reading the Seven Steps to Awakening, whether we're studying with Jehovah's Witnesses, which Christian said she is starting to do, Christian Passy, if we're reading A Course in Miracles or NTI or the teachings of Inner Ramana or anything else, it doesn't matter. If we are using it to create new beliefs in the mind, then what we are doing is turning it into a creed. But if we are letting it point us away from all beliefs into the absolute stillness, away from Catholicism, away from A Course in Miracles, away from NTI, away into the stillness, then we are using it for awakening. So creeds, religions are not truth. Inner stillness, the powerful sound of it, is the only truth. Creeds can point to truth if one seeks truth. This is the only useful purpose of a creed. Let every quote in the Seven Steps to Awakening point to truth, but do not use them to adopt new beliefs. New beliefs cover and hide truth. All right, scrolling down, we will click on number 33. And in the book, the last quote on page 21, being alone shines and rejoices as awareness. Hence, till all thought merges in absolute being awareness, the poor conceptual mind can never know true being, supreme awareness. So being itself, right? Being that alone. Being alone shines and rejoices as awareness. It reminds me of in A Course in Miracles when Jesus says, I don't remember the exact words, but I think it's in the Miracle Principles. It's near the beginning. He mentions that he is the same as us, right? The same, I don't know if he says the same love as us or what, but he is the same as us. There's no difference between him and us except for one. And that one difference is he's nothing but that love. And we are that love plus other stuff that we've added on top. Right? And our job is to let go of everything that we've added and to become just that love like him. Being alone shines and rejoices as awareness with nothing added. Hence, till all thought merges in absolute being awareness, the poor conceptual mind can never know true being, supreme awareness. All right, let's look at the journal. I see someone just entered the room, so let me just go ahead and quickly give a link. This is where we are. Okay, number 33 in the journal. True desire must be held to until the end of mind. As long as mind has any influence at all, true awareness self cannot be fully known, embraced. Pray, therefore, for total end of ego. Do not pluck the flower to show as indication of enlightenment achievement. Leave all flowers. Touch them not. Stay humble. Stay focused. Stay in silent desire. Let the pot boil dry. When I wrote number 33, when I journaled this, I was actually in Tiruvannamalai, and I had just recently picked up a book at the Ramana Ashram called The Poems of Sri Ramana Maharshi. They're poems that he wrote, and then, of course, translated into English. Translated into English by Major Chadwick, by the way. Major Chadwick, his gravesite was outside my room at the ashram. And he's the one who translated this book. I want to read to you a small section from this book, The Poems of Sri Ramana Maharshi. It's talking about Arunachala. It says, the hill Arunachala is identified with the spiritual heart of creation, or God. This appeared to the gods Brahma and Vishnu as a blazing column of fire. They wondered what it could be and started in competition with each other to find out its source. Brahma flew up as a swan, and Vishnu started to burrow down in the form of a boar. But the search was endless. Vishnu came up again, admitting his defeat. On his way, Brahma caught a flower that was falling and, taking it down to Vishnu, pretended that he had reached the top and had there picked this flower. Suddenly, Lord Shiva, who had taken the form of the column of fire, appeared to them. He condemned Brahma for his deceit and said that as a punishment, he should have no temple dedicated to his honor. As a reward for his honesty, Vishnu was told that he should receive universal worship. Striving to reach the end of the column of fire signifies the search in the heart for the realization of the self and all the difficulties thus entailed. Bhagavan said in explanation that the eye sense was Vishnu and the intellect Brahma. They both turned outward, and that is where they failed. So this story, again, is talking about when the mind tries to achieve enlightenment or knowledge, and it's just not possible. And eventually all the mind can do is say that it can't. But in this particular story, of course, which one was it? Vishnu, I think. I already forget which one it was. Yeah, Vishnu pretended that he had achieved knowledge, and he plucked a flower as proof, right? This flower is proof of my knowledge, proof of my enlightenment. Well, that's what this is referring to when it says true desire must be held to until the end of mind. As long as mind has any influence at all, true awareness self cannot be fully known, embraced. Pray, therefore, for the total end of ego. Do not pluck the flower to show as indication of enlightenment achievement. Right? And unfortunately, this is somewhat common, this idea of saying I'm achieved before the mind is gone. The mind is the one saying I'm achieved. And the mind is the one plucking the flower, like Vishnu did. Do not pluck the flower to show as indication of enlightenment achievement. Leave all flowers. It doesn't mean that you won't suddenly notice changes. You won't notice, for example, that you don't wish for things to be different anymore. You may notice, for example, that you feel love in your heart for everyone and no more judgment. But do not pluck that flower and say, I have achieved. Resist that temptation. Leave all flowers. Touch them not. Stay humble. Stay focused. Stay in silent desire. Let the pot boil dry. I've mentioned that to you before. I told you that I read this paragraph and it felt like guidance to me on Thanksgiving Day, but I'll read it to you now from the teachings of the, I'm sorry, this is from the Human Gospel of Ramana Maharshi by John Troy. Bhagavan's darshan brought Lokamal was a cook at Ramana Ashram when Ramana was alive. Bhagavan's darshan brought Lokamal back to the ashram she had left. She came, tearing herself away from her family, and now she was cooking. How Bhagavan appreciated that. One day, when he came into the kitchen, the sambar, which is something that they eat there, I don't know what it is, the sambar preparation was boiling in a big vessel. Bhagavan just asked, is it still on the fire or is it not? And then she, Lokamal, said, yes, it has to boil further. Bhagavan appreciated her saying, only Lokamal listens to me and makes the sambar complete its boiling. The rest of the people, in their haste, take it away half-cooked. Let the pot boil dry. Do not touch any of the flowers. Pray, therefore, for the total end of ego. Do not let mind say, I have achieved because of some apparent accomplishments, because of some apparent change in scene, because of some apparent mystical experiences, because of some apparent acquired skills like scribing or clairvoyance or healing. There's another story about a man who told Ramana he was going to go set in a cave, the same cave Ramana had sat in, until he achieved enlightenment. And there he saw in his mind's eye a fire burning a temple. And later that day, news reached him that a fire had indeed burnt a temple, as he had seen. And he became so excited, he left the cave, and he ran to Ramana. And he said, I saw in my mind's eye that the temple was on fire. And the temple was indeed on fire. I have achieved. And Ramana said, why did you leave the cave? You have not achieved. Go back into the cave. True desire must be held to until the end of mind. As long as mind has any influence at all, true awareness self cannot be fully known embraced. Pray, therefore, for the total end of ego. Do not pluck the flower to show as indication of enlightenment achievement. Leave all flowers. Touch them not. Stay humble. Stay focused. Stay in silent desire. Let the pot boil dry. Thank you, and I'll see you all on Friday. Bye-bye.